Hello and welcome to this podcast discussion on how to avoid the pitfalls of speculation and overreach with a clear vision and clarity on what you are investing in, powered by PSG Wealth. Now, a crucial aspect of investing that often gets overlooked is having a solid understanding of what you are actually investing in. While some investors make informed decisions, many lack a full grasp of their investments, which can lead to speculation and overreach in response to market movements. This often results in making uninformed investment choices. Joining me today is Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth, who's going to help us to make sense of, you know, how to avoid some of these, you know, pitfalls and how people can actually, you know, keep that steady and cool mind in the market. My name is Buriwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and I'll be your host for what looks to be a really great discussion. Now, Adrian, there's evidence of speculation in the market. Could you share, you know, some examples and insights into these trends and how they reflect broader issues of investor speculation?
Hi, Madiba. Yeah, it's good to chat to you. I think as for speculation, I think it's something that's been coming for a very long time, actually, in a broader context. So if you look at, for example, what's been happening on the US stock exchange, the S&P 500, and you have a look at what the average holding period is. Going back to the heydays of equity investing, you know, the average holding period for investing in a business was around 8 years. So to our mind, that's a reasonable time. You shouldn't be looking at shorter than that, because you're ultimately identifying a business that you think will do well over time, and you're happily buying a share in the business, and you buy into the prospect for long-term growth. And that's an investment mindset to have. But that holding period has gradually declined ever since, where the average holding period an investor has when they invest in a stock on the stock exchange is only 5 months. So to my mind, there's no way that you can invest in a business and say, I believe in this business, they will grow over the long term, and I'm going to buy a stake in the business, hold it for 5 months. It just doesn't make any sense. So broadly speaking, the marketplace has become more accessible, and with that, the speculation has increased over time to a point that long-term investing is becoming a bit of a dying art, I think. And you find similar things in other areas of markets. If you look at oil, for example, and the amount of oil that is produced for refineries on an annual basis versus the volumes traded. The volume traded of oil is now 400 times the value of what is produced. So it speaks to, you know, people speculating on oil prices, for example, and bringing things a bit more close to modern times. Crypto seems to be the commodity of choice for speculation. And if you look at what's being produced daily in terms of new mining versus what's traded daily, it's 1,000 times. So you see a lot of evidence of that. I mean, you can even take it further than that. I don't know how many of the listeners would be familiar with a business in the US called MicroStrategy. It's essentially, they claim to be, I would believe it, the largest corporate holder of Bitcoin on the planet. And what the business essentially does is it buys up Bitcoin with its capital, and then investors have an easy access point through the stock exchange to gain exposure to Bitcoin, as opposed to using one of the platforms that you might not be familiar with, or you don't feel comfortable supporting them through that channel. You prefer going through a stock exchange. But if you look at the valuation discrepancy there, you know, you would expect the business to be trading at more or less what the book value of the Bitcoin is on the balance sheet. But currently, the price of MicroStrategy is 3.5 times the book value of the Bitcoin asset. Put this down to a comparison with something that might be a bit more familiar. If you look at a listed property business like Growthpoint, for example, and it does something similar in nature, it uses capital to buy up properties. The properties go onto the balance sheet at a certain book value, and then the stock should be broadly reflective of that. But the existing Growthpoint share price is only 70% of the book value of the assets on the balance sheet. So we can see, you know, there's definitely some hype in that space, but it goes even further. So, I mean, we've got some of the ETF businesses that's launching leveraged ETFs. You can buy, for example, an ETF that's 3 times leveraged on MicroStrategy. I mean, that ETF is 90% down over the last 3 months. But you've got to ask, did investors know what they are getting into and what the potential range of outcomes could be? My thinking is majority of those investors were thinking, here's a business that's seemingly quite innovative in terms of how they buy up all the Bitcoin that they can get their hands on. And investors just simply want to be a part of it, regardless of the valuations, total disregard for what the long-term prospects are, very little research that goes into it. But those are the more extreme examples of speculation, I think. But I mean, we see evidence of this through just the normal stock market as well. I mean, we've spoken about how investors are buying up tech stocks, for example. And it's not to say they're bad businesses, but you do see a lot of froth in the pricing, and people aren't paying attention to cash flow and valuation and what the range of outcomes are from here. So plenty of hype that's around. With the tech space in particular, we've previously talked about how these businesses tend to capture the imaginations of investors in terms of selling their growth prospects and their ideas. And it can be quite exciting. It can create quite a bit of hype. And it doesn't make them bad investments, but you've got to be sure that when you buy them, you completely consider your research and what the range of outcomes are going forward.
Now, Adrian, with everything that you're saying, maybe we can get into, you know, what makes speculative investments so risky. And I ask that because you've given, you know, a number of different examples of, speculation, situations where perhaps the market value of a, particular security, maybe a stock or a share is perhaps far above what, the intrinsic asset value actually is, the book values actually are, right? So with that in mind, right, maybe you could just walk us through why the hype is actually so bad, because so many things do tend to be, overhyped, and perhaps some in the market don't fully get, what the implications are if things are to turn.
Yeah, I think it comes down to it's really all in the name. I mean, speculation by definition is something that you do with less certainty. You must accept that the range of outcomes are bigger, and therefore it's called speculative investment. But I think something inherent to it is sentiment over research, right? So it's largely what the market perceives the facts to be. It doesn't necessarily mean they are the facts. And for us, the facts sit in the research. You've got to do your homework before you invest. You've got to understand what you're actually buying. What is the cash flow generation of a business? What are the prospects for growth? And these aren't answers that you can typically answer with many of these speculative investments. They're purely bought on the basis of they are exciting, and closer to a hunch than a research proposal per se. The other thing is often with these is lacks transparency and understanding. So, do people really understand how Bitcoin works? Do they understand how the various financial instruments that have exposure to Bitcoin works? How does liquidity get impacted by the various range of approaches? And I think with any investment, you've got to ask, what's the outcome if things go wrong? How bad can it be if I'm wrong? And therefore, what am I willing to put down? What portion of my portfolio is the right portion, if any, et cetera? And these questions are quite fundamental in nature, but they overlook. Some might say our approach is boring. We look at financial statements and we look at cash flow, and then we try to see what we can generate in terms of dividends. But that old school way of investing is what investing is all about. If you ignore those things, it immediately goes to the realm of speculation. But I think, I'm talking from the perspective of representing a wealth manager. There's an often cited quote that says only 6% of the population will be able to afford the retirement lifestyle that they currently have. If we're in a situation where people are struggling that much, can we really afford to take these risks as South Africans more broadly? I don't think so. What we do need is a very solid plan for how to get to the goals to ensure that you can actually afford retirement, and then focus on reliable investments that have been researched properly to ensure that you maximize the probability that you will reach your goal. You can't sort of throw the Hail Mary pass and hope for the best. That's a really terrible strategy. And it seems like there's more of that happening at the moment.
Adrian, one of the things I'm very curious about with everything that we're talking about when it comes to speculation, when we see huge discrepancies, between, let's say, the book value of assets of a particular company versus its share price, and there's an upward delta, there's a delta that's, higher than that, right? That means that it's a lot of your well-established market players that are pushing up some of those, some of those valuations. You and I have spoken in the past about how independent money managers and investment professionals tend to be a bit better, around the emotion, around some of the mania that surrounds the markets than individual investors. But in this particular instance, it would sound to me like you're established guys, are perhaps feeding into, some of the hype that you're talking about. Yeah, so it just feels like, in the same way that feel like the same types of behaviors we would expect from your retail type investors, we are seeing some of that creeping in, to feed into the speculation that you're talking about. Am I overreaching, by saying that?
No, I think maybe less so in the South African case. I think we've got our fund management industry and the established players and the guys that are doing well have done well for many years by doing what they do well, and that's researching businesses and constructing portfolios for clients. We see very little speculation in our unit trust industry amongst professional money managers. I think where the danger comes in the US in particular is, I mean, I mentioned the examples of trading oil and trading Bitcoin. We must remember that these brokerages that facilitate that trade are generating revenue through that. And if you adopt a philosophy where anyone's welcome to use our platform to trade any instrument they like, and for us, it's about facilitating a trade, and we're not really too concerned about what the ultimate outcome of the client is. That's a risky situation. So you shouldn't be confusing that with the endorsement for the asset class. The person facilitating the trade, even if it's a good, long established stockbroking business, ultimately they're in the business of facilitating trades, whether it's good trades or bad trades. And I think that's where, our business is fundamentally different. We're a wealth management business, and our business is focused on ensuring clients reach their long-term goals through investing, not to just facilitate any trade for income. We want to make sure that clients do well over time. And I think that's where our industry is actually quite healthy. I think many of the asset managers in the industry obviously adopt the same philosophy. We're trying to do what's right for the client. We're trying to generate returns, but we're not just putting trades through for the sake of putting trades through. So I think, unfortunately, the consequence has been because these larger US institutional businesses are facilitating these trades, clients are inferring an endorsement of some sort, which I think is a dangerous view to have. I don't think we should see that as an endorsement by them. And what's further happened is obviously the regulators are involved and they're looking at it. And now there's a perception that, now the regulators are potentially endorsing it, which isn't the case. I think they want to move closer to it to understand it. And in certain cases, there's been unscrupulous behavior that they want to address. So you've got to be very careful what you perceive as potential endorsement for a specific asset or asset class versus is it really something that these investors are supporting. That said, other than in the South African case, there are, I mean, you can tell I'm not a big fan, but I think moreover than regardless of whether, Bitcoin's long-term successful or not, just by way of example, any cryptocurrency could be applicable. The real job is really making sure that investors find a reliable vehicle. Anybody that puts this in a client's portfolio is speculating. Because we don't know, no one knows. People will give you all sorts of arguments for saying it will fail or it will succeed. My view is not so much whether it will fail or succeed. My argument is I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows. So how do you put that in a client portfolio when your responsibility is to formulate a good long-term plan that will take them to where they need to go? So yeah, in short, I think just be very careful in terms of how much you read between the lines, whether it's really an endorsement or not.
Yeah, that's a very important one, you know, just around how, I guess, the goals of a particular investment manager or, you know, their business model actually influences the decisions that they make in the market. And I think that, you know, helps us to once again understand, you know, some of the other dynamics around speculation. But I want to touch on another term, you know, that we've been using through this discussion, Adrian, and that's overreach. What exactly do you mean by overreaching? And, you know, perhaps if you have some examples of, you know, how it can actually go wrong.
Yeah, I think again from a wealth planning context, although this applies in the asset management industry more broadly, is if you've sat down with a wealth manager to carve out a plan for how you get to your goals in 40 years' time, whether it's retirement or something else, and you've established what your needs are, how much income you'll need during that time, you know how much you need to put away, given your risk appetite, what you can invest in and what will typically be generated through that investment over time. The more vanilla asset classes are quite predictable over long periods. We know even equities that can be volatile over the short term, we know that you're pretty certain to achieve a long-term return of inflation plus 6 to 7%. And you can pencil that in if your investment horizon is sufficient, and you'll reliably get to that goal. I mean, the standard deviation around that, so the amount of variance that we see over, below or above it, over long periods is incredibly narrow. It's actually quite a predictable asset class if you give it enough time, where some of these others haven't even been around for the long term, so no one knows whether they will be reliable over the long term. But what happens with overreach is you've now identified the right asset class for you and for your plan and for your needs, and it goes into the portfolio. But the next thing you know, someone is advertising something new and exciting that captures the imagination somewhere, and you want exposure to this with the view that this will do incredibly well. Immediately you are speculating, but you are also overreaching. You might not even have to push yourself to generate that prospective high return that you think you're going to get. All that you're actually doing is risking the reliability of your own plan that was a lot more solid to start off with. So it places the investor in a very difficult position. How comfortable are you and how disciplined are you to say, I've got a good plan, I've got the right mix of asset classes to get me to my plan and the goals? How disciplined are you to then say, I note this exciting new thing in the market, but I'm willing to say no because it doesn't serve my purposes. It's going to generate the return that I don't actually need. I'm overreaching at the expense of my risk tolerance, because ultimately what could happen is, one, you could be wrong and the investment is a disaster, and secondly, these things tend to be more volatile in nature. So what that introduces is an element of uncertainty where you go into bad behavior because now you've done the investment, it falls by 50%, now you want to sell it, then it recovers, now you want to buy it higher again, and you go into that destructive pattern of investor behavior that we've also discussed before. So anything that introduces those kinds of risks, investors should be mindful of the potential journey that they'll follow over a long period of time, and what are the typical risks they'll see if they invest in X and Y. And that's paramount to wealth planning in general, to ensure that you can as best possible manage for all those types of risks. You need the foundation of a proper plan that's engineered based on empirical evidence. You need to be comfortable that you can walk a client through challenging times, etc. To my mind, I don't see how people do that if you've got Bitcoin exposure. How do you confidently tell someone, you know, don't worry, it's been evidence in the past, we go through these periods, everything will be fine long term? Don't think you can. So overreaching and putting yourself at risk there is really what we think is the challenge in markets at the moment. There's always something that looks a bit better, looks a bit more exciting. But those temptations can be super damaging over the long term.
Yeah, definitely. Over the long term, you can have some of those damaging behaviors. And like you said, someone makes the right decision initially, but you get excited by something else that could potentially make a high return, but at the same time, it could turn and go the other way. Hence, why we're talking about the speculation. But Adrian, how do these behaviors actually influence market dynamics, and what are the potential consequences for the economy at large when we see, something like this? I remember a few years ago, after the 2008 financial crisis, a lot of people argue to say that despite all the stimulus that was put into the economy, there wasn't there actually wasn't that much inflation that actually filtered into the economy. But some people then said actually there was inflation, and that inflation was ex actually experienced by the huge bull run in the stock market. A lot of it was speculation, all of that stuff. I'm just wondering, if something like that, feeds into this discussion that you and I are having right now.
No, I think that's spot on. I think, speculation can only really take place when there's excess. When people start to become complacent about what the real value of a rand is. If there's more money afloat, the US economy is a good example. So, there's a lot of issuance and stimulus provided, and the dollars are coming easily. And in that environment, it provides fertile ground for speculation. And the view that the inflation was largely created within capital markets is correct. I also think that's exactly what happened. The inflation was largely seen through the consumer behavior of investing into stock markets, which sadly is actually the right thing to do to invest. But at the same time, what's gone forgotten to an extent is not at any price. You still have to apply some discipline, some mindset around potential outcomes, and I think that's sort of fallen away. We should keep in mind that if we say that there's more capital floating around and we see evidence of speculation, within that there's mispricing of assets and risks for that matter. But the mispricing of assets is actually very good news for real investors, for long-term investors, because when people are just indiscriminately buying and selling things without thinking it through, good long-term investors are able to pick up opportunities at prices that aren't reflective of the real value. So I think for real investors, and I would put the South African unit trust space in that environment, I think our guys are actually very prudent. We speak to quite a lot of asset managers through the industry, and you get the sense that they see things very similarly. They're also concerned about the level of speculation, but they're also excited around using the mispricing opportunities to their advantage over the long term.
Adrian, before we let you go, I was actually just thinking about everything that we've spoken about today's and through today's discussion about, speculation. And I was just wondering, from an equities point of view specifically, we often hear a number of, different, companies, especially holding companies and that type of thing, and investment companies, often bemoaning the fact that their share prices are actually undervalued compared to their asset values, whereas we've been describing the opposite, where a lot of the time your share price is trading way above your actual, asset value and that type of thing. Where there's a discount, is that necessarily a an opposite phenomena? I guess, is that negative speculation, if I can call it that?
Well, I think that's a good example of why the research matters, because you need to understand why the discount is there. What often happens with the holding company is there's certain discounts being built in from things like there's obviously cost in a holding company structure that you still need to account for in your cash flow. So you can't just look at the book value of the assets. There's funding costs that you need to consider and all those things. And then broadly, sentiment also plays a role. So the market will discount it or trade it at a premium depending on how they see the prospects for the business. The property companies in South Africa have been severely punished following COVID. So they're all trading at bigger discounts. But there's a lot of hype in the US. So you get these businesses like MicroStrat with the Bitcoin holdings that are, trading at 3.5 times book value. So I think each case is unique, and in some cases a premium might be justified, and not all discounts are good discounts. There might be very good reasons, and even the discount that's in there might be insufficient for what we think the discount should be. So each case is really different, and you need to examine them very carefully, and then take it from there.
Right. That's how we end today's discussion, just understanding some of the market dynamics when it comes to how to avoid the pitfalls of overreach and having some clarity when people are in the market. Adrian just giving us a sense of your speculation, how it's evidenced in the market, where we have been seeing it, and some of the examples that he was given, such as MicroStrategy and their business around buying Bitcoin, but where the value of the security is far and above, and just talking about some of the hype in the market, how it actually comes in, the fact that some managers actually are holding, some investors are actually holding on to certain investments for a very short space of time, meaning there isn't that much, there isn't as much knowledge and research into what people are actually getting themselves into, and over time we see that manifest manifesting, in a market that doesn't fully understand what's going on. He also gave us an understanding of how the different goals and business models of certain investors actually influence how they make decisions, and that investors, wherever you are in the value chain, need to understand what is an endorsement versus what is just the way that a business operates, and also getting a sense what overreach actually is, how some of these behaviors influence market dynamics, and then at the end, talking about how something like a discount or a premium tends to then be built in based on some of these dynamics. That's it. That's how we end this podcast on how to avoid the pitfalls of overreach with a clear vision and clarity on what you are investing in, sponsored by PSG Wealth. Thank you so much to Adrian Parsky, is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. And I've been your host, Mliwa Kabaza, of The Business Day and The Financial Mail. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on ion.fm, Spotify, play.fm, Pocket Cast, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.